Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time. One of the there are a couple of things at work in this next story. It has to do with tax cuts here in Arizona. The legislature passed did some things with the tax brackets to make it easier for people to pay their taxes, and it lowered taxes for many people in Arizona, including small businesses. You go back to Prop 208, which I was not a fan of, and is effectively gone, Prop 208, because it was worded so horribly and it violated the Constitution of Arizona, which we don't need to get into. But what happened was the teacher unions here in Arizona, by the way, the same groups of people that said they were not political, they jumped on board with an issue where they wanted to raise taxes on wealthy people because, you know, in America, we have turned into a nation that demonizes success. In certain groups of people, business, if you are a profit seeking person in business, that's horrible, especially if you're in the medical business. If you have anything to do with medical and you make money at it, they think you're a horrible person. Now, you can be an athlete that makes millions of dollars, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. They're OK with that. Movie star, musician, actor, actress, whatever. You can make all the money in the world that you've earned. But if you do it in a legitimate business, you're seen as an evil person that's just profiteering. I don't understand the mentality, but that's what we've turned into. When we were young, when I was young, we used to say to kids, myself included, growing up without much, hearing from people, if I've done it, you can do it. Work hard. That can happen to you. There weren't guaranteed outcomes, but there were guaranteed opportunities. And that's the nation we've always been. I've never worried about money. Money doesn't concern me. Success concerns me. And I think that one of the things is that we should teach children is that wealth is usually a byproduct of success. Focus on becoming great at something. If you're the best at something, you're going to get paid. Generally speaking, wealth follows being the best, whether you're the best heart surgeon, the best brain surgeon, the best electrician in town. If you're the best plumber in town, there's a very good chance that you are going to be wealthy. If you are the best at anything, Larry Fitzgerald, I've always used him as the example. Larry Fitzgerald is going to go down in NFL history as one of the best receivers, if not the best, in the top conversation of the top three receivers all time in the NFL. He's a very wealthy man because he is the best. So it doesn't matter what profession you end up in. If you strive to be the best, not the richest, wealth usually follows. And that's what we should be teaching kids about success. That wealthy people, generally speaking, are wealthy because they're very good at what they do. We should strive for excellence, and wealth usually follows. Well, this argument about the tax cuts, this Prop 208 thing, was punish the rich. What they lied about was, in my opinion, what the lie was about was that they said it wasn't going to affect that many small businesses, when the truth is it absolutely hammered small businesses at a time that they were trying to climb out of a pandemic. So that's where the adjustment in taxes, also in my opinion, comes from. And now there's a group of people wants a ballot referendum. They want the people to be able to vote. Now, it is, I want you to know that over, I think it was in Arizona, 44% of the last vote that we cast for president and for the Senate and, you know, that national election we had here in Arizona, 44% were people that were considered to be low income earners. And when you look at that, I must admit that I don't believe in class warfare, but the argument works. If you tell someone it's not their fault that they don't make a lot of money, that it's the fault of the people they work for, that they should be forced to pay you more, that we should raise the minimum wage, we set this class warfare argument up. It's impossible. And we shouldn't do it. We used to look at people and say, you know what? They started with nothing and look what they've become. You can do that. Work hard. Become great. So now they want to go in with a referendum. They're going to try to get the voting public in Arizona to say the state legislature can't do that. First of all, that's a democracy. That's not a representative republic. We are a representative republic. I said there's a couple of things at work. The other one is that the idea that we have this these referendums, that we have this way of running our government, that we run it on propositions, this propositional form of government. That's a mob rules mentality. That's not a legislative process. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I know it's boring to most people, but the idea that everybody says, well, it's the voice of the people. No, the voice of the people is electing the people you want in our state legislature, electing the governor you want. That's where our voice is. That's why our founding fathers in their brilliance hated the idea of a raw democracy. They thought that was absolutely the worst form of government. That's why we have a representative republic. Small districts in every single state based on population to go to Washington, D.C. in what's called the People's House, the House of Representatives, and they represent small districts. Then each state has two senators, equal power in the state senate or in the Senate from the states. So that the Senate then has 100 senators that also vote. They get bills that come together. They go to the president's desk, and the president can either veto or sign that law into law. That's our form of government, and it works in our state legislature as well. The propositional form of government we have, even when propositions end the way I want them to, I think is a horrible way to do business. And I know for most people, this is a topic that's not exciting or sexy, but these things are going to affect everybody in this state. The ability for people, and it says, of course, that this thing mostly helps the wealthy. Well, I've got news for you. The wealthy people are the ones that mostly pay the taxes. And whenever I say that, someone responds in the federal government that there are billionaires and billion-dollar companies that pay zero in taxes, which I think is horrible. They should have to pay, which, again, is a reason why we should simplify our tax codes. All the loopholes we have are created there with all these other taxes, so you have to have an accountant do your taxes. Why should it be so hard for us to do our taxes? Why shouldn't you be able to fill out a form and say, this is the amount of money I make? Let's say you have a deduction for children. These are my dependents. This is how much I paid. This is either what you owe me back or this is what I owe you. We have all of these different deductions and standard deductions and optional deductions and, you know, deducting clothing and deducting meals and all of these other things that were created that are clever ways within the law for you to pay as little as possible. I've got no problem with paying the government as little as possible, but why don't we simplify the tax code? We have the sliding scale where wealthier people not only pay more, they pay more in percentage as well. It doesn't make any sense to me. This punish the rich mentality has never helped anyone. You're not going to make yourself wealthier by making somebody else poorer. It never has worked and it never will work. In a moment, we're going to talk about the COVID vaccines in Arizona. We talked with the interim director, Don Harrington, with the interim director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. More of what he had to say about vaccines coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. You want to win some tickets to see the Phoenix Suns in their home opener? It's very simple. Just text the word SUNS to 411-923. You could win a pair of tickets by texting the word SUNS to 411-923. All right, we had on Don Harrington. He is the interim director of the Arizona Department of Health Services this morning, and I asked him a few questions, and one of them is about the side effects from the vaccine, and he talked about how rare those are. I want to talk about that. I want you to hear a little bit of what he said about the side effects of the vaccines.
I've had both doses and a booster, and I had slight side effects. I had a little achy legs and that kind of thing, nothing severe. But I think that the side effects that we're seeing are far outweighed by the benefit of the vaccine. And from that perspective, it is just such an important thing, that vaccine. As with all vaccines, we see there's a thing called the VAERS report, and that's a report that reports adverse reactions that the federal government keeps track of. Now, a lot of people look at that VAERS report on the surface and don't understand beyond the surface what it means, and a lot of those are just self-reports. Almost all of them are. And so from that perspective, when somebody calls in and said, I have a headache, because which is a symptom also of the vaccine, and they can report that, and that will show up as an adverse reaction in their report. So I think people have to be really cautious at how they approach looking at any kind of adverse reaction reporting system.
I wonder if there are more anti-vax people now because of this vaccine, or if there's just a spotlight on them because of the fight that's happening. And it's, I think that's an excellent question, because the people that I know that aren't getting the vaccine don't get vaccines at all. They're anti-vax people. There are other people that say this one was kind of rushed through. We don't know the long-term effects. I want to wait and see. And the other part of this is the antibodies that are built up from natural immunity when you have had COVID-19. Now, remember, we've got a large number of cases in Arizona. There was a lull, so there's a three-day total that came in today, and I thought it was very interesting. So I want you just very quickly to hear this. For 3 days, the three-day total, under the age of 20, there have been over 2,000 new cases. Hospitalizations, they subtracted negative three new hospitalizations. Conversely, less than half of that in new cases of over 65 at 990. So there's over 2,000 cases of people over the age, under the age of 20. 20 to 44, there's been over 3,100 cases. So if you just add those two up, there have been 5,200 new cases reported in 3 days. There have been only four hospitalizations in that whole age group of under 45. I want you to think about that. Four new hospitalizations. Over the age of 65, there have been 990 new cases reported. 93 hospitalizations, that's almost 10%, and 101 new deaths. 101. So younger people saying, you know, I am not worried about if I get this virus. It has an over a 99% survival rate. That's for everyone combined. The younger you get, the higher that number goes up. So I asked Mr. Harrington about the antibodies versus the vaccine. Why are we not counting and saying to people, if you've had the virus and you have the antibodies, you don't have to get the vaccine? And here's what he said.
One of the things that the early studies are showing is that immunity from having the disease may only last about 3 months. So from the perspective of a longer lasting strategy, the vaccine is a far better strategy than having the immunity from the disease.
I have a very close friend, obviously not going to say his name, but I have a very close friend who had COVID, and he's over 60, although not over 65. And he had COVID, and he was going through testing for the antibodies. I think it's been a year. He still has antibodies. Now, I'm not arguing with what the doctor, what Don Harrington is saying. He's got results. Maybe my friend is someone that is unique. I don't know that. But isn't it interesting that we don't even consider the people that have already had COVID-19? And the antibodies from natural immunity. What we're hearing from Don Harrington is that they believe that the antibodies that are built up from the vaccine are stronger than actually, or last longer than actually getting the virus. Now, I don't know. I'll be honest. He says early data. I don't know how true any of that is, but that's the answer. They want people to get vaccinated. Again, I've been fully vaccinated. For me, it was the right thing to do. But I'm not concerned being around someone that's not been vaccinated. Not at all. I asked him about mandates. Where do they stand in the Department of Health Services on mandates?
We don't deal with mandates, Mike. What we do is we deal with recommendations on public health matters. So we do recommend mitigation strategies that we think will be effective, but we don't do mandates.
He didn't want to talk about mandates. I don't blame him. It gets too political. But when you look around at what we are doing and you look at where we are at in Arizona, we are watching hospitalizations drop. We are at 26% of ICU beds are being utilized right now by COVID patients, and only 19% of hospital beds are being used by COVID patients. We are seeing a reduction in those. When you look at the numbers, young people, this demographic of people under the age of 45 years old, they are far and away the biggest group of people that are getting and spreading COVID-19, without a doubt. We have vaccinated the largest number of people are people over the age of 65, and they are still have the highest numbers of hospitalizations and the highest numbers of deaths. I don't understand the focus on young people. They keep saying, but a young person can get it and be asymptomatic and they can give it to an older person. That's true. That's absolutely true. But we have gotten away from telling people they have to protect themselves. That's my biggest issue with this. We continue to say to young, healthy people, you have to do this to protect someone else. We keep saying to people like myself that have been vaccinated, you need to wear a mask to protect other people. And it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. People need to be diligent. People need to protect themselves. And we just don't see it happening. And I think it's sad. I think it's the wrong thing to do. What we're going to do in a moment is talk about rising prices. We've talked earlier about this. Gas prices are going up. But what else is happening? The supply chain issue. What's going to happen for the holidays? Not just to the consumer. It's bad for the consumer. But what about retailers? How about retailers? Are they going to make it through this holiday season? All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. Procter & Gamble is charging more for items. Tide detergent, Gillette razors. They're going to start charging more for grooming products, beauty products, oral care products. The price increase comes in addition to the earlier moves to start charging more for certain things like diapers and toilet paper. Procter & Gamble, which released quarterly financial results on Tuesday, said the moves, along with increased demand for products, should help offset added costs. So there's a supply and demand issue that they're talking about, but they're also talking about the higher costs. And when costs go up, then you're going to pay more. That just makes sense. That's simple math. When earlier this year, I think it was less than 2 months ago, it had to be, probably less than a month ago, when the White House press secretary acted really surprised that companies would raise their prices when costs go up, that she'd never heard of such a thing. And when people buy that, what I mean by buy it is when the media doesn't laugh at her, when the media doesn't, go on questioning, say, you've never heard of this. You don't think that when it costs more to do business. And for me, for anybody out there that runs a business, good businesses anyway, knows what it costs to produce whatever it is you're selling, whether it's selling a skill or you're selling a product. In my business, in the contracting business, if you have a service truck on the road, and there's a lot of you out there, if you're in a service truck right now, your boss knows how much it costs per week, per day, per month to keep you and that truck on the road. They factor in the cost of the vehicle itself, the cost of maintenance, the cost of fuel, the cost of all those things. That on top of the products that are in that van that they have to store, that they have to carry, and then what it costs to pay you, the taxes that they have to match, a benefit package maybe that you're getting. So they know what their cost is usually on a daily basis to have that truck on the road. That factors into the hourly rate that they charge for you to go somewhere. And it's like that with every other product. When you're on a job site, when I used to bid jobs, there are things called productive labor and non-productive labor. And you factor in a non-productive labor into the cost of doing a job. Someone has to do the paperwork. Someone has to do all of those things behind the scenes to make those jobs work. And so the more it costs you, the more it costs the end user. When I would do a job for someone, you would pull a permit sometimes. Usually a general contractor did. But if I had to pull a permit for an electrical job, you paid for that permit. And a lot of times it's a straight across the board charge where if I pay $65 for the permit, you pay $65 for the permit. But if my cost goes up, your cost goes up. I don't eat that. So it doesn't matter if it's a tax, a fee, or some other cost, when it goes up, you're going to pay more. With their interview with truck drivers, and truck drivers are saying, people that own trucking companies or own their own rig, talk about, listen, I don't feel bad for me because I'm passing on these fuel costs to the end user. I feel bad for the people that are getting goods that are shipped to them because they are the ones that are going to pay the increased costs for fuel. And it's just that's what happens everywhere. Major companies like Procter & Gamble and sole proprietor businesses. Energy crunch its global recovery as winter approaches. Shipping containers that spent weeks aboard ships are stuck at ports now being dumped in nearby neighborhoods. construction cost spikes may prompt some developers to consider delaying or canceling projects. So let's talk about that industry. Here in Arizona, one of the biggest problems that we have is affordable housing. A lot of it has to do with demand. There is a high demand because we are a destination where people are moving here from all over the country. So myself, being a homeowner, it benefits me because I have seen an increase in the value in my home much faster than normal times. But for people that are out there seeking to buy homes, that's part of the, that is the American dream, is to own a piece of land, to own a home. And for those people out there that are trying to do that, it's becoming more and more difficult. We're talking about by next year, the median home price being over $500,000 here in the Valley. $500,000. How does somebody entering the housing market be able to afford that? Especially if you factor in the fact that interest rates are going to be going back up. And when construction costs go up, the cost of new, those new homes go up as well. When wood costs more and, you know, all of these other things, the concrete and what, it, you know, roofing and all the materials, when that, when copper for wire in your home, when copper for the copper pipes with plumbers goes up, your costs go up. And when we're seeing this happen and then there's nothing really being done about it, there are demands being made now of the White House to do more. Why not call in the National Guard? Why not open up military ports and use those ports as a place to load and unload some of the ships where there's now over 100 ships at sea trying to get on shore? And when you see this stuff, it's, I want you to hear it. This is about the ship backlog.
The waiting line of cargo ships off the California coast is getting longer. A record 100 ships are waiting to enter the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. For comparison, an average of only 17 would typically be waiting. And 45 more ships are due to arrive by Thursday, adding to the supply chain backlog that's leading to empty store shelves across the country.
So now we have empty store shelves across the country, which means goods are also, the cost of those goods is going to go up just based on demand. And now you're seeing nothing being done. Now, the government can't control the free markets, but it can ease in the free markets. It can make things easier. And what's funny about this is we keep hearing from the White House through their spokespersons, through Jen Psaki, that this is a good thing, that increased demand is a good thing. And that's what's causing all this. They know really well that it isn't just increased demand that's causing these issues. There was, we talk about following the science and getting in front of COVID-19. When New York and New Jersey got hit and we saw the huge spike the first time around, valuable lessons were learned across the country about being timely in your response. That responding, a lag in response by a matter of days or a week, was very costly in how high the spike in cases went. So we learned to respond faster so that bad things didn't happen. Well, we should have seen a lot of this coming, and other people did. Other people saw this coming. When this huge port in China was shut down, we saw that there was going to be a lag, that there was going to be a bottleneck in that industry. Nothing was done. Nothing was done by our country. We didn't jump in front of that. I'd use the example of FEMA. When we know, when, because hurricanes are a very slow-moving storm, when they see the track of a hurricane, when it's a couple of days away, and they see it's in the Gulf of Mexico, and it's tracking toward New Orleans, when it's tracking towards the panhandle of Florida, or it's going to go over and it's going to hit Texas, FEMA stages ahead of time. Local law enforcement has command centers with fire department and paramedics and police officers, sheriff's deputies, troopers, where they are in command posts ready, so where they ride out the storm in those command posts. And immediately after the storm passes, they hit the streets and they start doing rescue operations because they prepare ahead of time. We've done nothing to ease this. We've done nothing with this at all. And now we're a day late and a dollar short, and they want to try to fool everybody and say it's a good thing. So the next time you pump gas, rest easy. It's a good thing that you're paying so much more for gasoline. It's a joke. And it's something every American should be questioning. Why aren't we doing more? See what happens at Christmas time. Coming up in just a few moments, we have got to talk about a couple of things. The State Department, foreign policy. The State Department now says they are going to open an investigation on the Afghanistan withdrawal. Will it produce anything? That's the question. Well, we'll answer it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the Mike Broomhead Show. If you have not subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast yet, do it. Very simple to do, and you'll never miss a minute of the show again. The Mike Broomhead Show podcast brought to you this week by Retirement Planners of America. State Department launching an investigation into the Afghanistan withdrawal. The series of investigations will tackle a range of issues from the State Department, immigrant visas to the processing of Afghans who applied for refugee admission into the U.S., resettlement of those refugees, visa recipients. And according to this action and a memorandum from the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, that was first obtained by Politico. So we're going to look into what happened in the Afghanistan withdrawal. Was it handled properly? I have had a lot of disagreements with this administration. Foreign policy has been one of the biggest. China has just test fired a missile, and they surprised our intelligence gathering. Now, I will tell you, test firing a nuclear missile and a hypersonic, supersonic missile is scary enough. But the fact that our intelligence gatherers were blindsided by it, is that another byproduct of COVID? Is that another byproduct of people being locked away? I don't know the answer to that. All I do know is that there are many people that are isolationists in America, and I agree with this in part. We should not be the world's police force. I don't agree with sending the military in to be policemen and women. I don't think they should have to do that. But I do think we have to have influence in foreign policy. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that we have to be an influencer in the world. Afghanistan is a shining example of it. I want you to hear an ABC News report. This is just a little piece of what's happening with Afghanistan.
The inspector general will look into how the Biden administration planned and conducted the Afghanistan evacuation, how it helped Afghan nationals leave, and how they're being resettled. And it won't just review what happened this year, but how the Trump administration handled special immigrant visas as well. Lawmakers requested the review, and a number of congressional committees are conducting their own.
And it's a valuable thing to do. Our foreign policy in Afghanistan, the way that we withdrew from Afghanistan, and it's funny how most of America has stopped protecting or stopped defending the way this was done. When you talk about us leaving, we were getting out. The Trump administration did initiate us getting out. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The American people, 70% of the American people, thought that we should get out of Afghanistan. But military leaders had been saying we should leave a force behind, 2,300 people in an Air Force base. It looks like the Chinese are probably going to take over Bagram Air Base that we built. We left behind weapons that are being sold in pop-up stores. We have pop-up stores in the parking lots on Valentine's Day where they sell flowers and candy and stuffed animals. We around the 4th of July where they sell fireworks. We know that these pop-up stores happen in grocery store parking lots. In Afghanistan, they've got the same kind of tents that are popping up, and they're selling American weaponry, sometimes automatic weapons, sometimes as big as 50 caliber rifles are being sold that were American-made, not destroyed. So if everybody says logistically to bring those things home is a nightmare, maybe so, but they could be destroyed. Part of a mission, and again, I'm not super familiar with how the Delta Force or how the Navy SEALs work or how the Green Berets work, but those specialized units, the way they work, if a piece of equipment and the high-tech equipment that they are privy to, if a piece of equipment gets damaged in a mission, they destroy it. One of the helicopters that was used in the killing of Osama bin Laden had a problem. They destroyed that vehicle because of the reverse engineering that's possible and the other things that can happen with a piece of equipment being left behind. So there's a lot to investigate about what we've done. And on top of that now, you've got, I want you to hear Steve Gaynor, he's a former State Department worker, talking about this Chinese missile test.
This is a kind of weapon that was actually talked about in the 1950s, and that is being able to rain nuclear weapons down from space. This weapon sort of cruises through the way, way upper atmosphere at between 100 and 300,000 feet, and that is why it's so difficult for the U.S. to even look at or find, much less attack. The Chinese have built 300 ICBM silos in the Gobi Desert. So not only are there 300 missile silos with multiple weapons, they now have a weapon that we don't have, we can't defend against, we can't even see. So we are at a strategic disadvantage. We are behind and the Chinese have the edge.
And you cannot blame that solely on the Biden administration. This is not something that was just created in the last couple of years. I don't know what the intel we had on this before was. But again, it's you look at the enemies, our enemies around the world that are becoming better and better militarily. And we are literally becoming outgunned in many ways. That's something that should concern Americans. I'm not a warmonger. It's peace through strength. Ronald Reagan said it best. Peace through strength. And can we ensure that anymore? So there's a lot in foreign policy, more in foreign policy, writing checks to countries. There's a lot of diplomacy that needs to be at work, and it doesn't seem like America is on the winning edge of this. You take cyber warfare into account, and we're way behind the curve. So we need to do more than mask mandates, and we need to do more than laws that protect people's right to have their feelings hurt. Coming up just after 11 o'clock, we're going to talk about the border. All that's next.